kind of losing track of time. I don't think we started this last week, so it's probably a couple of weeks ago. So I want to just take the opportunity to do a little bit of review, looking at the promises of God. We looked at what a promise is, and we saw a number of common elements. It's something that can be depended upon. It's held in the future. We like some of these definitions. A promise is a word that goes forth into unfulfilled time. It reaches ahead of its speaker and its recipient to mark an appointment between them and the future. It's a binding offers or commitments on the part of one person to another. The promises of God reveal His particular and eternal purposes to which He is unchangeably committed and upon which believers can totally depend. We tried to do a little bit of word study. We saw that there's some difficulties in that because there's no Hebrew word that carries the same concept or definition of the English word promise. We saw also the other side, the Greek words. There was so many different Greek words. But one of the commonalities there was the connection to what? The word, spoken word, right? It's something that was uttered or announced. Okay, we noted that there are a number of different words in Scripture that we would have to look at. Oath, word, covenant, even thus saith the Lord, because whatever the Lord speaks is truth, and if He's speaking into the future, it is as good as a promise. Not all of the promises are phrased, "I promise you," and so it can be kind of hard to discern some of those things. We can fairly easily pass over them and not realize the preciousness of the truth that's presented. We noted how a promise has to be expressed. It can't just be held in the mind, and that promises that are written are binding. And all of the promises that we have are God's spoken word, but we have it in the form of writing. And so it is to us a promissory note. And every promise must be received by faith with patience. It's a promise. It's not held in the present. That would be a fact. It's only as good as the person making the promise. And we noted that God is worthy, He's unchangeable, He's not able to forget, He's all-powerful, He governs over all of His creation and can turn any aspect of His creation to the fulfilling of His purposes. We see that He is truth, He cannot lie, He's faithful, He keeps His word. And that is such an important aspect. We could look at a number of verses along those lines of the faithfulness of God, and we'll see some more of those, I think, even tonight. Wanted to make some distinctions. A promise is only good to the one that it is intended for, so we can't claim promises that weren't made to us, but we also noted that promises that God made to others can be made good to us spiritually, that we gain from those promises, we gain from the completion or fulfillment of those promises, because what God has promised to others and fulfilled, He will also fulfill His promises to us. Some promises are conditional, whether they were going to walk with the Lord and keep His covenant, keep His law, then He would do certain things. If they would break His covenant, He would treat them a different way. There is a difference between a principle and a promise. This gets a little bit harder and harder to distinguish sometimes. You get into the Proverbs, and a lot of those things are principles and not necessarily promises, and yet there's still much encouragement from those things, as we rely upon the faithfulness of God and not upon our own selves. There is a difference between a fact and a promise. And we noted that God is love is a fact that is true eternally. When he says, I am with you always, that is a fact. But as it looks into the future, we hold it also as a promise. He's not going to leave us. He'll be with us to the end of the age. And so facts sometimes bear with them a certain element of promise, but they are distinct. Tonight I want to make a few contrasts. As we think about God's promises, we oftentimes think of promises in terms of the relationships that we have, the promises that other people have made to us. And even as we think about God's promises, we can also contrast that to the archenemy, the devil, and what is he like in promises. And have you ever had somebody promise you something and not come through? Every promise anybody's ever made, they kept, huh? No. Sadly, we've probably promised things ourselves and didn't keep those promises. It's not just that others have not been faithful to us. How oftentimes we are not faithful to our own word. All of God's promises are righteous and lawful. We live in a sin-cursed world, and people sometimes promise things that they shouldn't. They promise, or they get others to promise things that are not in line with the law. And so we need to realize that those kind of promises sometimes are broken just because to fulfill them would make them criminal. But in God, all of his promises are upright, righteous, pure. There's nothing about the legality of his promise that's going to keep him from keeping his promises. When God speaks, it's always in line with his perfect holiness. There's never a shadow of impropriety in the things that God promises to us. None of God's promises are contradictory. Sometimes we make double promises. We promise one person one thing, and then we kind of forget about it, or we don't have a good mental picture of our time frame, the calendar, and we go and give somebody else our word that we're going to be a certain place or do a certain thing. And then as the day approaches, we realize we got two things we've promised, and we just can't keep both of them. Or one promise, in order to fulfill it, would cancel out the promise we've made to somebody else. And when God makes promises, they're not going to be contradictory. As he promises to you, keeping his promise to me is not going to cancel out his promise to you. That's part of the faithfulness of God. It's so important to see that, even in terms of God's promises to Israel. And so many look at Israel as being set aside and the church takes Israel's place. No, God has made eternal promises to Israel, and he's made eternal promises to us, and they don't cancel each other out. He is always going to be consistent. All of his promises go back to eternity and form one harmonious scheme of promissory kindness. I like that thought, as you realize nothing is a surprise to God. He didn't just on the spur of the moment, out of rashness, make a promise to us, but that these things were a part of God in eternity past. And he has set forth the whole plan from creation to the consummation, and nothing is forgotten, nothing is a surprise, everything is ordered. And so as he makes one promise, it falls in line with the totality of his eternal plan. It's all harmonious, it all works together, and it's all his kindness to us. None of God's promises are vain comfort or deception. I think of times when I don't know, some child is being disruptive, being an embarrassment to the parent, and the parent makes some kind of promise. If you just behave, I'll take you out and get ice cream. Or maybe a child is scared of a thunderstorm, and the parent comes to the room, and the child says, "Promise me you'll stay with me all night." "Okay, I'll promise." And then after the child falls asleep, the parent gets up and goes elsewhere. Those are vain, empty promises. They're designed that the words "I promise" are supposed to be the comfort, but the action behind them is empty. God doesn't just give us words. He doesn't just say "I promise" so that we get this emotional sense of security. But when He promises, there's meat behind it. There is a reality behind these things. He never deceives us. He never makes a false promise. And yet, how hard it is to trust His promises. He's been proven faithful, and we're going to look at that. And it's almost Sunday school, children's church kind of stuff. We look at, this is what God promised, this is what God performed. And we know those things. We see in Scripture that God is forever perfectly faithful to His promises. He never deceives us. He never misleads us. He never misdirects us. And yet when it comes, or the rubber meets the road, when we actually get into a situation of difficulty and distress, it's so hard for us to trust that God will keep His word. Proverbs 10:22, "He adds no sorrow with it." As I think about that, the deception aspect, Satan, in his promises, though maybe some aspect of it comes about, there's also the lie that comes with it. There's also the harm that comes with it. You go back to Satan making promises to Eve in the garden. What did he say? "You'll know good and evil." Is that true? They did know good and evil. Was it a good thing? It wasn't. It came with bitterness. It came with gall. You know, there was that sliver of truth, but there was a great deception. And God doesn't do that to us. He doesn't bait and switch. Boy, how disappointing and frustrating it is when we experience that. We see businesses advertise one thing and give another. You know, just recently, I've had some CDs at the bank, and they have an advertisement right there on the counter what the offering of the interest rate is. And I get the paper in the mail. It says it's going to re-up for the next 6 months, and you'll have to, we don't know until the day it re-ups what the interest rate will be. Well, in my thinking, it's still advertised at the bank at this rate. But when it re-upped it half of that. Oh, this is a special rate. That's bait and switch. You advertised to me one thing. You didn't give me a consistent communication. God doesn't do that. What He promises, He performs. None of God's promises are reluctantly made. We don't twist God's arm. He doesn't do it because He's afraid that we're going to leave Him, or that nobody's ever going to follow Him if He doesn't do certain things. Sometimes people make these kind of promises trying to coerce people. You know, I want to keep them close. I want to have them as my friend. I don't want to lose my spouse. And we make these promises because we feel like somebody's got our arm twisted around our back. And that's not the case with God. There's no fear in God that made Him make these promises to us. They are entirely out of His loving kindness to us. They are generously given. They are generated from a loving heart that withholds no good thing from those that trust Him. He is ready to promise. And when He's ready to promise, He's unreluctant to keep that promise. You know, sometimes we make a reluctant promise and the day comes around when we have to keep it and we begrudgingly keep those promises. I really don't want to do it, but I guess I said I would. And so we have a bad attitude about it. Not with God. When He promises us something, it is free-flowing from His heart and the fulfillment of it also. None of God's promises are altered. Psalm 89, verse 34. Okay, how many times we'd like to change the things we agreed to? We want to rewrite it. We want to put in stipulations. And we do those things after the fact. But God doesn't do that. He is not going to change the rules of the game when we're in the moment of need. When we have come to a crisis point in our life and we're grasping on to the promise, we're not going to find that suddenly He's going to say, "Yes, but just a minute, I want to change that. You haven't been faithful. You haven't done this or you haven't done that. You don't deserve this. I know I made this promise," but we're always going to find God faithful in our time of need to grasp onto those promises. They are unaltered. They're unchanging. So I want to stop and look at promises that have been kept. And I know this is basic, and we all know these stories. We know that these are promises. We know that God has kept them. But it's still important that we start with this in our understanding. God has consistently, faithfully, all through history, all through the recorded word, been faithful. He's not going to be unfaithful now. But also, as we look at these, I would like just to ask, what does it take for God to keep this promise? Or what did it take for God to keep this promise? Let's go back to, well, before we get there, I want us to recognize also in this that it is the glory of God to make and keep promises. God brings glory to His name. If He ever failed to meet a single promise that He made, it would be a mark against Him. It would dishonor Him. He would not be perfect, faithful God. Deuteronomy chapter 7 and verses 6 through 9. Okay, we see that it's not based upon the people the promise is made to. It's not because you are great. There is nothing in you. It's because God has set His love upon you. He swore to your fathers. He's made a promise, and therefore He's going to keep it. But it goes on, and it gives that glory to God. It elevates His name. The Lord your God, He is God, the faithful God who keeps covenant and mercy for 1,000 generations. 1 Chronicles 15, 8 through 36. Now, we're not going to have to read that whole thing. Okay. Did I get the wrong passage here? That's not the right passage. Yes, I believe it's 16 here. In verses 14 through 16 there, he speaks of God's covenant. His judgments are all in all the earth. Remember His covenant forever, the word which He commanded for 1,000 generations, the covenant which He made with Abraham, and His oath to Isaac, and confirmed it to Jacob for a statute. So he's focusing on the promises of God. And then as you drop down in verse 25, "For the Lord is great and greatly to be praised. He is also to be feared above all gods, for all the gods of the peoples are idols." Verse 28, "Give to the Lord, O families of the peoples, give to the Lord glory and strength. Give to the Lord glory, do His name." Why? Because He was a covenant-keeping God. It's coming out of this meditation on God's faithfulness to His covenant, and then this brings glory to His name. Nehemiah chapter 1 and verse 5, and Deuteronomy 9 and verse 4. It's Daniel. Daniel 9, 4. Titus 1 and verse 2. Acts 26 and verse 6. Okay, as we look at that term hope, again, it's the confident expectation. Romans 1, verses 2 and 3. Okay, God has promised and has fulfilled time and time again. 1 Thessalonians 5:24. He is known and glorified for His faithfulness. The very first promise in Genesis chapter 3 and verse 15. Okay, and we understand that this is a messianic promise, that Jesus Christ would come, that Satan would oppose Him, crucify Him, but ultimately in that, Satan would be utterly defeated. That Jesus Christ is not overcome by this, but He's going to crush Satan's head. And we see that this is a promise fulfilled. 1 John 3 and verse 8. Okay, Jesus was manifested that He would destroy the works of the devil. Colossians 2:15. Clark? He has triumphed over them, completely disarmed principalities and powers. Hebrews 2 and verse 14. Okay. Rendering Him powerless. John 12:31. Okay, the ruler of this world will be cast out. Revelation 12 and verse 7 through 17. Okay, and we know this passage is looking to the future. We've noted that in Jesus Christ's death, Satan was utterly defeated. Christ rose victorious. Satan is powerless. But it is going to be a period of time before the fullness of that defeat is realized. But the reality of it is now. Revelation 20 and verse 10. So Satan can rage and pour out his wrath and frustration upon the children of God, but ultimately he has lost. He's going to be cast into the lake of fire for all of eternity, never to be a disruption again. He's never going to cause any further problem. 1 John 4, 4. You have overcome. He that is in you is greater than he that is in the world. Jesus Christ has already won the victory. Satan has no power. What did it take for God to keep the promise of Genesis chapter 3 and verse 15? The life of His Son. He made a promise to the point that He fulfilled it with the very life of His Son, Jesus Christ. We have the Abrahamic covenant in Genesis chapter 12. As we look at the Abrahamic covenant, there are certain aspects that have not yet been entirely fulfilled, but many of these things have. And so you can look at that and see, did God make of Abraham a great nation? Yes, very clearly. Even today, Israel is a great nation. Did God bless him? He became a very wealthy man, even though he was a wanderer. Blessed him with offspring. Blessed his offspring and cared for them. Did he get a great name? Certainly. We're still talking about him today, not only in Christianity, but also in the Muslim world. He's very much recognized. You shall be a blessing. Was he a blessing? Think of the five kings that carried away, and he went after them and brought them back and brought back all their goods, and he didn't take the goods for himself. I think you'd say that he was a blessing to somebody there, right? And we know that he has been a blessing to even the Gentiles through Jesus Christ, who came through his seed. All the families of the earth have been blessed. Chapter 15 and verse 18. Okay, so here's one that hasn't been entirely kept. They have never been in full possession of all of that territory, and yet they did inherit the land, and we'll see that in a little bit. But all of these nations that are then listed are also those that, all of a sudden his name went right out of my head. Oh man, this is terrible. Joshua. The ones that Joshua was able to defeat. So chapter 18, verses 10 through 18. Or 10 and 18. Yeah, I think I did. No, that's not the right one. Yeah. God promised that Sarah would conceive and have a son. She's beyond the age. And yet we see that that was fulfilled. And then Galatians 3, 6 through 9. Okay, so not only did God make a great nation of him, we have the nation of Israel, but that goes even beyond that, that all of those that are of faith are of the seed of Abraham. And so that has extended immensely down through the ages. So what did it take for God to keep his covenant promises to Abraham? A lot of grace and mercy, right? A lot of mercy. And again, the death of his son in order to bring about that full blessing. The rolling back of natural laws, right? She was beyond the age of having children. Physically not possible. But God changed, intervened into his creation in order to make that happen. In here's another promise he made in chapter 15, verses 13 through 16. Okay, what did it take for God to fulfill this promise? He's talking about how Abraham's descendants were going to go down into Egypt and be enslaved for 400 years, but then bring them back into the land. Yeah, because you still have all that 40 years wandering in the wilderness. The 10 plagues, again, miraculous intervention into the natural realm. These things were not normal. Take a look at the Davidic covenant in 1 Chronicles 17, 10 through 14. Okay, so here we have the promise of descendant of David being on the throne forever. Obviously, that hasn't been fully fulfilled yet because we haven't gotten into eternity, but we have seen the fulfillment of it in the fact that Jesus Christ has come as a descendant of David, rightful king of Israel. He's died and rose again and ascended on high, and he's going to be given that earthly kingdom in time. But what did it take for God to keep that promise? Okay, love. We've been studying the kings. And it's one of the common things we're seeing there is one dynasty rises up and they get put down. There's wars. There's it's always the target. You know, if you're the king, you're wearing the target on your back. And so in order for this to have happened, God had to preserve them. And again, going back to grace and mercy, because they didn't always deserve it, and yet God was faithful to maintain that line. How easily it could have been snuffed out. Or he could have changed his promise because of their unfaithfulness. They certainly deserved it. Joshua, Deuteronomy 31, 3 through 8. Okay, as you look through the book of Joshua, we see that these things are fulfilled. God goes before them, drives out the enemy. They inherit the land, and Joshua's testimony is that not a word of what God had promised had fallen short. And so, again, you're getting the idea here. We're out of time, but you think about what it took. Again, he intervened into the very natural realm in keeping the sun in the sky, in sending hornets ahead of them, in order to do these things. And then I was thinking, well, you know, all of this is you know, kind of in line with the big picture thing. What about just the normal person that, you know, if they were kind of removed from the account, we probably wouldn't miss them very much. Is there promises that have been kept to those kind of people? And I think of Caleb being one of those. When he was faithful in spying out the land, God promised him that he would receive that inheritance. And then in Joshua 15, we see that that is fulfilled, that he receives the inheritance, he goes in and defeats the giants in the land, and God's promise was kept. So I hope that's an encouragement to you as we think about the promises of God, that it is not because of who we are or how faithful we've been. He's able to keep his promises through his mercy and his grace, and he is going to move heaven and earth to keep his promise, even to the death of his son. And so that is how serious he is about keeping his word.